SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back at the races, hour two, and as promised, Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. And Steve is probably reborn after a Virgin Island vacation. You must be fresh and fit and ready.
Oh, man, you're right. It's great.
Where were you? I just knew you were in the Virgin Islands. That's all I heard.
Well, we started at St. Thomas.
I love St. Thomas.
It was a family vacation for a group of us. It was myself and my wife, Kimberly. And in addition, we had my sister, Debbie, and her husband. They live in Sebastian, Florida. But my daughter and a friend of hers came, and then also some really close friend of ours from Virginia, Kathy, and Tim and Kathy Jennings. And we started in St. Thomas, and we went to of the British Virgin Islands, and we went to St. John's, and we were all over. We dove reefs, we snorkeled, we got to eat at some great restaurants, and just, you know, some beach time. And over at the I can't remember where the Soggy Dollar is, but that particular cove there on the British Virgin Islands, and, you know, just incredible. I can't tell you. The excess charters that we went with was like the best. And if anybody ever wants to reach out and find out about excess charters, if you want one of the most fantastic weeks of your life, this big catamaran took us around and housed 10 people. And it's a 70-foot catamaran. And we just, like, you know, I just can't tell you how beautiful the views were and how great the water was, and, you know, just a great relaxing week. It's probably the best vacation I've ever had in my entire life.
Really nice. Well, you must have been around Tortola.
Yeah, well, everywhere around there, but we only stopped in Tortola one time, but that was it pretty much. You know, the rest of the time all in the peripheral islands.
Nice.
You know, just incredible.
Very cool, like Joss Van Dyke, and nice. All right. Don't tell Tina about this.
Okay.
Well, I tried to reach you because things were piling up topics, and obviously the most obvious topic is the passing of AP Indy, and you were, of course, invoked yesterday, and as was Bill Harrigan, who's going to join us in the next hour, and you know, Neil Drysdale talking about, when I asked him, Steve, the difficulties, and the reason I knew about the challenges was because over the years you've referenced the work on AP Indy, who's your favorite, and so this has to be a special passing for you.
Well, yeah, it is actually a little, you know, I mean, obviously anytime you lose, you know, an animal that you were close with. I mean, not close with all of them. They're like your kids when you work on them. I look at them that way. I always have. He was special from the standpoint that I was around him as a yearling until the time he retired. And it's funny because Neil had the horse delivered to his barn at, of all places, Hollywood Park, and he was deciding, because the BBA had bought him and another colt that was by Fappiano, out of a really nice mare, named, who ended up being a horse called AP Jet. And they were both owned by a fellow by the name of Panamore Sotomaki, and he was a Japanese businessman and owned a bunch of real estate and things like this, and was a big player in Japan. But he wanted to race one in the United States and one in Japan. And You know, ironically, this was 1990 when he was a yearling, and the deal was that he had to decide which one of the two he wanted. And ironically, I had been around Summer Squall as both a 2-year-old and during his 3-year-old year, and I said, well, you know, for me, Neil, I said, that his half brother, that this one colt, the Seattle Slough colt, just won the, you know, he's won the Preakness winner. He was undefeated at 2. I said, I believe I'd leave him here. You know, it's probably a little better, better risk, you know, because being that Summer Squall was by Stormbird. So he ended up, AP Jet went to Japan, and then AP Indy stayed in the United States. And then ironically, I ended up, you know, being, you know, kind of his, he was my horse to look after with Neil. And as Neil told me, he says, you know, I was the only one that had pretty much ever worked on him. And the bad part about that was I had a private job in California with Alan Paulson. And then, you know, he had a horse that he was really, really high on, which was champion 2-year-old the year before, which was Arazi. And, you know, it just so happens that into the 3-year-old year, it turned out AP India ended up being the best 3-year-old and obviously horse of the year, but it kind of put me in a little bit of a tenuous position because, Neil called me up and wanted me to work on the horse before the Derby and told me he had some problems and stuff. I said, Neil, if I show up, I said, I might lose my job, you know. I mean, Mr. Paulson gave me the freedom to work on other people's horses, but I had a feeling he wouldn't accept that one very good because he had a real soft spot in his heart for Arazi. So as it turned out, I wasn't needed. He had a quarter crack. We conferred with an old friend of mine named Joey Carroll, and then Joey stayed on with the team, and I hooked up after the Derby had run and ate Billy T1N. And then we got the foot squared away, and then we never looked back from there on. I mean, we had a few little minor setbacks here and there, but nothing major anymore. And he made the dances and then ended up being, you know, horse of the year. So soft place in my heart for him. He was a tough horse. And, I pretty much, you know, had an opportunity to, you know, being at a fairly young age, I'd only been out of veterinary school at that point in time, like 7 years, and Neil entrusted, you know, literally the best horse, dirt horse he probably ever trained in my care, and I really appreciate that. And it bonded a great friendship between us, and I worked on a lot of other nice horses after that for Neil. But ironically, the two best horses, the best filly and the best colt I ever worked on were both under Neil's care as a trainer, and for him, I really can't say enough thanks for, you know, entrusting their care to me.
The part that he brought up that really I either had forgotten or have never noticed, had never seen, it involved the shoe coming off in the Gold Cup, and
he pulled it off at the gate. He almost unseated Eddie D and Eddie Delahousie in that race.
Well, and Neil said you guys were in the stall with him until 4 a.m. working on that hoof and trying to get him in a position that it would be able to then, you know, be in shape for 3 weeks later to run. And talk about that, Steve, because I didn't get a chance to ask Neil. He had horses on the track training yesterday, so he had to go after about 15 minutes. But one of the follow-up questions I would have asked him is, in this era, would they have potentially not let him compete coming off of a situation like that? Neil said he basically had burned up his hoof, you know, badly running barefoot that day.
They did. And if you remember, if you go back and watch it, the track at Belmont Park was a sealed racetrack because it was raining the whole time, and it was water, and it was a mess. It was, you know, and so, you know, Belmont being the way it is, when it's sealed, it's extremely hard and fast. And the thing that was ironic, or if you go back and look at the races that day, no one closed on that racetrack. I mean, it was a You know, I mean, it was a carousel. I mean, you went to the lead and you couldn't get ahead. You know, nobody could make up ground. AP Indy came from way back to close to be third in that race. And it set him up. I mean, he's such a classy animal. I mean, he ran his heart out, but he did it, you know, and he paid a price for it. He tore his foot up pretty good. So we got to work and started figuring out, like, you know, what we're going to do to, you know, make this last dance. And it was at Gulfstream Park. I was living in California, and at that point in time, I had come back to New York, and then I stayed back east the entire month of October, and then into, you know, the 1st of November, and then, of course, went to Florida and then flew down because we had horses. Mr. Paulson had horses running in those races, too. We had Eliza. We had Fauda, who'd won the Spinster, because I'd been at Keeneland as well. And then we also had Fraze was with Belmont for the turf, and you know, we had a big day that day. You know, just had nice horses win nice races. 1992 at Gulfstream Park, and then of course to you know, the cherry on top of the sundae was, you know, getting AP Indy to win the Classic. You know, I mean, just it was a big effort and a very, very much a very concerted team effort. You know, myself, Joey Carroll, John Donahue, which was, you know, Neil's assistant there and also rode for him. Danny Lopez, who was the groom, who, you know, I was really tight with. He was a great groom, did a great job, you know, rubbed some really great horses, but none better than AP Indy. And it's a prime example of when you put together a good team and let them do their job, the orchestration done by Neil, I mean, you can't say enough about the job he did. And you know, every team has to have a leader, and he was the general, and we all, you know, we were all under his orders, and it worked out. I mean, you love it when a plan comes together, but Neil's, you know, we talked about it and had dinners many times and gone and done things together and whatever, but nothing, you know, ever stands out in my mind nearly as much as the memory of that particular horse and then his leadership and our camaraderie. And, you know, I'll take it with me the rest of my life, you know, and Neil and I are still very close and will remain so until we are no longer on this earth together, I guess.
You've talked about him in such glowing terms forever, and we've also used him as a point of reference for Ridgeling experience.
Yeah.
Neil talked about it right away, right from the opening, after that first race, he said we could tell that it was bothering him, and you know, had to get it fished out.
Yeah, well, he did. Well, there's no reason. And the lesson I learned from that is when a horse is a Ridgeling and you buy them as a Ridgeling, just take it out then. Make it a non-factor from that point forward. I think it works out better in the long run. That's the lesson I learned from that, Steve, because, and I've talked about it many times, you know, because we've talked about Ridgelings, and the Ridgelings used to be like a horse was a Ridgeling. He was discounted. He was put off. And I was told that for a long time, and no one does that much anymore. And I stopped doing it a long time ago because people would say to me, well, I don't want a Ridgeling. I said, well, I worked on AP Indy and he was a Ridgeling, didn't stop him. So, And you know, it made a huge difference in how I manage them. And now I just do it before they're broke or right after they're broke, because you get that out of the way and it won't come up and bite you in the tuchus when you're basically in the heat of the battle, in the war zone during, you know, your campaign where you've got now it's effective performance. So do it, get it out of there, make it a non-factor, move forward and never have to look back over your shoulder anymore. That's the key. That's where I learned from it, and that's what I've applied ever since.
Boy, there's so much about this that you really triggered, including the reference to AP Jet. And I did not realize that AP Jet, who then eventually came back, that John Nayrud stood at Sugar Maple. I didn't realize that he was the other horse in that two pack.
Yep, he sure was. And you know, the only thing that I, you know, I mean, I had to draw. I didn't know the family as well, obviously, from, you know, from the family, the mother that AP Jet was out of. But I knew, you know, Weekend Surprise had produced, you know, her first foal was Summer Squall. And, And I was really, really impressed. If you go back and watch Summer Squall's hopeful at Saratoga, he got bumped, and he wasn't a real big strapping horse as a two-year-old. He was a little bit, you know, smaller, medium size. But, I mean, he's in between horses, and, you know, there was an inquiry in that race, but, I mean, he was a classy, hard-trying animal, and that stood out in my mind, and I just said, you know, if I were you, Neil, you know, being, you know, I mean, and then Weekend Surprise at that point had produced a classic winner because he won the Preakness at two, but, yep. Or three, I mean. But as it turned out, I just said, you know, I definitely think this would be the one to keep. But, I mean, that's just my opinion. I mean, Neil was going to make his own mind up anyway. I mean, what the hell do I know, right? So, but anyway, as it turned out, you know, he made the right decision, and we all, you know, got to work on, you know, a Hall of Fame horse. And he did nothing but, you know, his class and his caliber and his presence. And then my luck of being around an animal like that basically taught me so much. And then, you know, really, I mean, you know, he was a classy animal. He really taught me a lot on how to be confident and be good, you know, what I can do and what I should do around really nice horses. And he certainly elevated my career. I can't, you know, he did more for me. I'd say it's the oldest adage in the world is that, you know, horses make trainers, trainers don't make horses. Well, I got news for you. Good horses make good vets too. They make you look a lot smarter than you really are. Oh, probably are.
Well, and you know, it also occurs to me to bring into this with you. Was that your first, you know, derby doctor experience, you know, 11th hour? I mean, you certainly were involved in some subsequently trying to, you know, hold a horse together and you know, have him ready for Saturday. But this must have been, I mean, this one must have been arduous, especially, you know, we always see the reference to the quarter crack, but Neil made it clear that it was not a quarter crack in the sense that we've come to know them, you know, with the, you know, the metal sutures. This was one that was behind the hoof wall. It was a hidden, obscured
yes,
quarter crack.
Yeah, it was. And where Joe Carroll, shined was Joey was really, really good with a foot. And I knew him from the Standardbred days back when I worked for Billy Houghton. And was around, and I worked under Kenny Sieber. Well, you know, and God rest his soul, Dr. Sieber was, you know, just, I mean, he's my mentor and my friend and, you know, life. I mean, just, I mean, he, whenever I had a question, he was my go-to guy. I mean, you know, he helped make my career. You know, without him, I wouldn't have known much. Yeah, I wouldn't have been a very good racetrack veterinarian without him, that's for sure. But bottom line was that he knew Joey as well, and we both brought Joey in, and the problem was that it was an area underneath the wall that had not broken out yet. And it was literally had to be classified and really could be called a blind quarter crack because it was bugging him. And Joey said, listen, I'm going to do it this way. Animal lint text, draw it. See if we can't get this thing to find a weak point to break out. And then by a leap of faith and knowledge, but faith as well, he basically dremeled along the base of the heel toward the back of the heel, and then he found the actual pocket and went ahead and created a drainage for it, and then, you know, and then we went ahead and he went ahead and sutured it together, pulled together, and from that point forward, due to his foresight and knowledge and experience and then leap of faith and whatever you want to call it, the horse's foot was never a problem until he ripped that shoe off in the jockey club in that sea at Belmont Park, and then Joey shined again. He put together a shoe and a foot to hold it together the best we could. I did what I could do to keep everything quieted, and you know, you love it when a plan comes together and you got a general that, you know, Neil was our General Patton. We were soldiers, and we all delivered. We, you know, that's the way I look at it, and can't look at it any other way because, you know, you got to love it when a plan comes together.
You have to have the horse, and you know, the horse responds the way he does. That is amazing. I mean, because to have him turn around, let's see, Derby Saturday to the Peter Pan has got to be 3 weeks.
Yep.
And then 2 weeks later to the Belmont and to win the way he did. And Neil also made the point that AP Indy combined with Eddie Delahousse, that they never, that it was a rare that they would blow out anybody. Eddie wasn't in the habit of having to extend a horse more than was necessary to win. And so it seems like this was a kismet scenario. And you know what's nice about, to me, we just had this conversation with Andy Serling about recency bias and this era's need for horses to win every single time. This was a horse that didn't win every single time, and it nobody really ever questioned when it came to the end what a great career it was and what a terrific horse he was. Despite the fact that he had lost the Molson, that he had lost the Gold Cup, that he got beat in his debut, that, you know, he didn't have to go 13-0.
Well, he won the right races, you know.
Yeah, and, there you go. You
know, he was a grade one winner at two. You know, and I remember distinctly there was a horse in the Hollywood Paternity called Dance Floor that Lucas had in there, and it was owned by
MC Hammer,
a guy that was
MC Hammer,
exactly, rapper. And they, I remember that they talked about how Delahousse had the flog, you know, and there was a big deal about overuse of the whip, and he hit him 27 times coming down, you know, from the quarter pole to the wire at Hollywood Park. And, you know, I mean, Eddie just wanted to keep the horse kind of like, you know, to his duty and his job. And then, you know, I mean, you know, they made a big deal about that. But, I mean, if you watch the Breeders' Cup Classic, a mile and a quarter, literally almost a year or a little less than a year later, I mean, you know, he won the Breeders' Cup Classic in a hand ride, you know, over a Pleasant Tap.
Yep.
And so you know, then you have a dichotomy there. You got a horse, supposedly you got a flog to or beat to win, and then he wins against the best horses that can do a bridle on the dirt, you know, and a horse that just come off a mile and a quarter win, or whatever the jockey club was back then, maybe a mile and a half then, but I think it was a mile and a quarter. But
still a
bottom
quarter.
Line
yeah.
was, I mean, yeah, but anyway, it was, you know, because the jockey club used to be a mile and a half, and then they switched
yep.
it back to a mile and a quarter. So, but bottom line was, the horse got the job done, and he did it in the hand ride. And Eddie, his timing was impeccable. And AP Indy, if you remember correctly, he had a very unusual running style.
Yes.
Very unlike someone's call. He looked like a bird dog going down there. He had his head very, he was a very low-headed horse, you know. So I guess that was, I never did ask Eddie about what that was like. To ride a horse with his head so low, but it didn't make a difference. He turned out to be a great racehorse and a great sire, and that's the good part.
We're going to talk to Sid Fernando next about the sire career and the stallion career and the legacy and the sons and with Tappet, a grandson that is transforming the breed, seemingly. Steve, before we go, a quick reference to concerns and the fines that were levied against Joe Sharp and also against Brett Galloon regarding the levamisole and its, you know, being an ingredient and the you know, the ingredient that tests in the warmers that and seemingly a warmer being used off brand, off label, as it were, something that a product that is actually designed more for livestock.
And yes.
You know, we do understand that one of the benefits and motivations is that it's a product that apparently will help with EPM. But it just feels like this was careless and sloppy. I mean, what's your take on it? And explain to everybody, you know, what the levamisole entails.
Well, levamisole is mainly, like you said, truly is a livestock warmer. Is what's mainly cattle and sheep, primarily sheep and goats, the primary species that it's utilized for as a rule. What we have noticed in the past, and this would go back close to 30 years, unfortunately, or more, was that labamisol had a secondary effect when utilized in other species, even, you know, pet animals and whatever, as being an immunostimulant. And so, you know, it would be used interim in certain cases, pneumonias, like, you know, chronic infections, things like this, as something that would help boost the immune system. The use of it in horses is only, the only thing I've ever heard of it used for is an immunostimulant. But it would go back quite a ways for that to happen. And obviously what most people are concerned about, well, why are we so concerned about it in a racehorse? Well, the truth of the matter is that it's metabolized into a stimulant that basically falls into into the class 2 category, I believe. I'm not 1,000% certain on that, but it will, metabolite is known to be, you know, a class 2 or a relatively high level stimulant. And that's really what the problem is. You know, the fact that it's being used so close to, you know, racing brings into question the intent, obviously. No one can basically judge intent. I mean, I don't have a crystal ball or a Ouija board, and I wouldn't use it anyway. But the point is, you know, it's using it that close to events is got to bring into question, you know, the, you know, judiciousness of or advice that you would take it under from either your veterinarian or who is supplying the idea. I mean, apparently Joe Sharp is saying that they bought it at a feed store or something like this, and, you know, I guess that's just what they're I think that's what I've heard or read. Is that correct?
Yeah, okay. And what you said is also correct about the metabolite. If it metabolizes, if there's enough of it in the system over enough long enough period of time, it'll metabolize into aminorrhics. And the thing is, none of these cases, and people who are, you know, outraged, none of these cases actually tested for aminorrhics, and so the stimulant portion of this didn't take effect. People are saying, well, why aren't they suspended? Why is it such a light fine and so forth? You know, just they had to I think what $500 fines or $1,000 fines, and the purses in the wind on the wind side of things, but it didn't, it hadn't been in the system to the extent that it turned into the metabolized stimulant.
Right. Well, bottom line is that, you know, it's because labamisol itself is a lower class by the ARCI as far as its classification of you know, if it comes up in a test. And right. So therefore, that's why but, you know, it hurts a guy's career in an owner's position pretty distinctly when you've got a mare or a filly or a colt, or if you're trying to get to, you know, especially like, you know, with all the debacle after, you know, the CHRB, you know, didn't announce, you know, that Justify had a, you know, something in him, and, you know, so it creates doubt, the public's perception, the whole bit. So,
correct.
I mean, you know, and the owners are certainly, you know, penalized great deal by the value that they lose in the horses that basically got the black type. And in addition, you know, to the purse earnings, you know, along with the trainer.
Sure.
You know, so the whole thing ends up being kind of a black eye for the industry.
Agreed.
And that's really where the problem starts and ends, is what it comes down to.
Yeah, and I wanted people to understand what the product was. For those that, I mean, we could probably do a half segment on EPM, and we haven't talked about EPM in a long time. But for those that are unaware, it's neurological. It attacks the neurologic system in horses, and it's carried by possum,
exactly.
The horses will ingest possum feces, and that's how it's carried. And there's plenty of possum around racetracks and around farms, given feed that the possum would love to, you know, would love to have as meals. And so that's the EPM portion of this, and the benefit of using labamisol, because it helps counteract the EPM symptoms.
Well, it's usually used in conjunction with a a drug or medication that will basically will kill the organism. You know, the protozoan that actually creates the problem, insists in the nervous tissue, and then migrates around and creates damage, and also affects performance and or the ability to for muscles to work properly and get good, you know, signals to it from the nervous tissue and whatnot. But it's used in conjunction with an antiprotozoal, which would be like, you know, there are like Clozaril. Marquee is the one of the products. That's a trade name that Bayer calls their product, but it's used in conjunction with them. I don't want you to get the impression that people use this to get rid of EPM, but they use it in conjunction with other medications.
Dr. Stephen Allday, always, always helpful, and particularly with the topics of the day, but AP Indy, whose career in no small part, thanks to your care and attention. And Steve, I appreciate it very much.
Good talking to you, Steve. Have a good one. Take care.
Dr. Stephen Allday, Horse Health Today, brought to you by Lubricin and Reborn. Lubricin, Lubricin.com. And you should also visit thealldayway.com, where Steve and Alex Hassinger will answer your questions. You can reach right out to them. Thealldayway.com, your pleasure horse, your riding horse, sport horse, whatever it is, your retiree, any issue, Steve and Alex will help you with it. 90 minutes in, 90 to come. Sid Fernando is going to join us next. Sire Watch Pedigree Focus, brought to you by Hillendale and the tributes to AP Indy. Do not stop, because Sid will talk about his stallion career, the expectations, and then exceeding them, and the lasting impact that AP Indy is going to have. And it won't be completely known and accountable for years yet. We're also going to talk to Bill Harrigan, who got AP Indy going as a young horse. It'll just be good to talk to Bill. Looking forward to this. I've wanted Harrigan on forever. Back after this, though. Second half at the races on this Wednesday, Sirius XM. Stay with us.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at HorseBills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Forum Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Forum delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsforum. Enter code DRF Sports.
University Executive Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Biggest stories in the world of horse racing. This is At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Took a trip on a bus that I didn't know. Met a girl selling drinks at the disco. Said truth comes back when you let it go. Seems complicated because it's really so simple. Walking down Young Street on a Friday. Can't follow them, gotta do it my way. No fast lane, still on the highway. Moving in and out, no doubt there's a bride.
No time to get down, cause I'm
we're back at the races. Second half on this Wednesday as we continue to acknowledge and honor and remember AP Indy. And it really, I said this to Neil Drysdale yesterday, and I'm going to say it to Sid from a different perspective when it comes to his stallion career. It's amazing that a horse at the age of 31, who, you know, had been out of the shed for 10 years, that the response is so overwhelming. Sid, good morning.
How are you?
Very good. We're more or less bringing a parade of voices forward. Haven't gotten to Eddie D yet, but Neil yesterday and you today, Dr. Allday, who attended to him. Bill Harrigan is going to join us next, who got his career started as a young horse. And it really feels appropriate, Sid. I mean, he's as big on both sides of the aisle from the breeding and racing standpoint as anybody in recent memory.
Yeah, he was an iconic horse, and I was listening to Dr. Allday talk about his, the head carriage, and actually, I do have the answer to that. I'll retweet this article too. But Francis Caron wrote what I think is one of the most definitive pieces on AP Indy in Trainer Magazine a few years ago, where she spoke to everyone connected to the horse. And there's a quote where she's spoken to Eddie D. And Eddie, this type of low head carriage, there have been big horses in the past. Chief's Crown was one of them. AP Indy, he was very pronounced. And Eddie D, she asked Eddie D about that. And Eddie, here's the direct quote that answers the Steve Allday question about the head carriage. Eddie said, quote, "Ironically, he was very comfortable. I rode horses like that didn't have his talent, and they were uncomfortable. Even with his unorthodox way of running, he was so smooth." And so there's the answer to that. He was a very smooth ride. He was a Cadillac, and he did have that head carriage, but it was so iconic in so many ways, as you pointed out, from being an exceptional-looking yearling. And, a lot of the Seattle Slough horses might not be pretty. They might be growthy. They might be on the coarse side. He was a very smooth, really good-looking yearling. kind of distinctive that way for Seattle SLU. It's no wonder he won, you know, made the $2.9 million as a yearling, the highest price that year. But, of course, he had the pedigree behind him, a massive pedigree. And, you know, he was by a Triple Crown winner in Seattle SLU, out of a mare by a Triple Crown winner in Secretariat. And that mare, Weekend Surprise, well, not only did she get another classic winner in Summer Squall, but she was inbred herself closely, 2x4, to Something Royal, the dam of Secretariat. So, you know, it's a terrific pedigree bred by Will Farish and Bill Kilroy. And they got Mr. Suramaki, who bought the horse later after the Belmont, sold part of the horse back to Will Farish, Bill Kilroy, and Harold Goodman, and they secured the horse's stand at Lane's End. And it's one of those stories where, you know, the highest price yearling from one of the greatest pedigrees, great physicals, becomes a terrific racehorse, a classic winner, goes to stud, and continues as an outstanding stallion, and then becomes an outstanding broodmare sire. And it's one of the reasons why, to answer your question, why there's so much interest in this horse. He dies in the old age of 31. He's an icon in his own lifetime. And he's carrying this bloodline, which goes back to Nashville, who was imported to Claiborne and changed the breed kind of here. Nashville to his son, you know, of Old Ruler, and through a kind of an obscure branch coming through, you know, a son that had a brief career, a grandson that had a brief career at Claiborne, Bold Reasoning. The Seattle SLU was a, you know, inexpensive yearling to the AP Indy. And, you know, now AP Indy, of course, as you noted, is the grandsire of Tappet, whose influence is burgeoning. And you know, stamping the breed here, so it's a legendary story.
Sid, from your perspective, and your career, you know, basically encompasses, you know, the whole AP Indy story from from the start to the end, really, and now the subsequent chapters. It just feels like it's a rarity to have a horse that was bred, and you know, there was this huge expectation right from the sale result, fulfill the expectation on the racetrack, then go and not just fulfill, but seemingly exceed expectation of him at stud. It just feels like he's the complete, you know, the complete arc of a male horse's potential from start to finish.
It's very much so. I mean, you know, people pay a lot of money for yearlings, and the reality is that many of these high-priced yearlings don't fulfill expectations. And the juxtaposition of this horse that did, I mean, you can count them on your hand through the years. I mean, how many sale toppers, highest priced yearling of that year, actually became a legend on the track, a legend in the breeding shed, and then a legend with his mares and subsequent male line. That's one of the things that has defined AP Indy, and particularly so because AP Indy, the line, is such a line for the United States, for North America. It's a dirt line, really. It's not a line that you see in Europe. It's not a line that you see in Japan or really anywhere else. It's a line that one of the main lines that have defined the American racehorse, the dirt horse, the classic horse. And, you know, it's a distinct North American story. And that's, I think that's part of the appeal of this horse in a way, Steve. You know, we've had great stallions. We've had and Northern Dancer was an outstanding stallion, obviously. A lot of his influence was in Europe, right? This horse has, and even Mr. Prospector had so much European appeal and success. But this particular horse has defined the North American racing excellence. And so because of that, I think it takes on an even more added import.
I've got so many ways to get sidetracked in this discussion, Sid. And I don't know if you heard yesterday when I suggested an extent that he was sort of the anti Stormcat, that I made the suggestion that perhaps the AP Indy is really the start of the move, the pendulum swing back to route going in general, and then you fold in the turf things that we discuss, and turf equaling stamina, but that you know, AP Indy and the desire to get to him, and then to his sons, and what they're bringing to the party, isn't he really the linchpin to, you know, what I continually suggest is a preference in this era for route going pedigrees?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you know, Stormcat was another exceptional horse. Of course, Stormcat had that success in Europe and abroad. You know, Stormcat's best son was Giant's Causeway, who was the Iron Horse of Europe, and he came to study here. AP Indy really, you know, AP Indy's had the occasional, they tried him in Europe. He's had, you know, horses like Seattle Song and so forth. But the real impact was dirt. And you're right, he had that stamina. It was the stamina that, you know, he got from his sire and the broodmare sire, the sire line. And, you know, the sire and the broodmare sire, in this particular case, keep in mind...
Both Secretariat.
It's the same line, right? Secretariat by Bold Ruler, by Nash Rula. AP Indies by Seattle Slough, Bold Reasoning, Bold Nesian, Bold Ruler, Nash Rula. So you've got a doubling up of that Nash Rula line, which created a distinct American racehorse when he was imported from Europe to Claiborne. This is the line, obviously, that became for the Phippses with Bold Ruler. And then, you know, you've had so many other sons, too. And such other iconic Nash Rula line horses. And a lot of those horses did have an impact in Europe. Notably, Mill Reef, the great European horse, was by Never Bend. That's Captain Guggenheim's Kane Hoy horse. And Never Bend was the son of Nash Rula. You've had that Nash Rula branch have an impact in Europe through many different lines, including Caro. But what was distinct with AP Indy was this was a line that predominantly, if you go back and you look through Bold Ruler, then you get a Bold Ruler's son, Bold Nesian, his son, the talented, very fast, Bold Reasoning, short-lived, who got Seattle Slough, who energized the entire line because he was an outstanding stallion as well, and got AP Indy. And AP Indy now has, through various sons, including his last champion son at Honor, at Lane's End, ironically, Honor Code, who's going to have a shot with his first three-year-old. But through the Claiborne Stallion, Pulpit, and Pulpit, of course, got Tappet, but there's so many other lines. Spencer has Malibu Moon, and Claiborne has Flatter. You know, they've still got some young sons like Commissioner at Windstar. They went back to Korea and brought back Take Charge Indy, another later son of AP Indy. So, you know, this is a line that has, as I said before, not to be repetitive, but, you know, has been so distinctly North American. And as you pointed out, it is the line that really did, along with the Fappiano branch of Mr. Prospector, through Unbridled, Empire Maker, whatnot, it is the line that brought a lot of stamina to into our culture again. And so he's got a lot of very important accomplishments that have, you know, really defined him. And he's touched all parts of the breed here because, you know, he's got he's been a broodmare sire of sires as well, so you know it's an important part of racing culture. But he stands as a kind of a new iconic figure for people that came up with him, you know, and have seen the process and have seen his progeny on both sides. Mares and stallions.
And it's amazing. I brought up the Stormcat portion of this. Both AP Indy and Stormcat out of Secretariat Mares. And when you look at the two pedigrees, here's Stormcat, who was nearly an outcross. He's 4x5 with Nirko. In the pedigree, and then AP Indy is heavily inbred. He's got all kinds of commonalities in the five generations. 4x3 with Bold Ruler, 5x4 with Daz Ruler, of course. Prince Quillo in here too. 5x4. You mentioned Sir Gaylord, so Turn Two's involved here, I think, at 5x5 with Turn Two, Something Royal, as you mentioned. I mean, right up close when it comes to Weekend Surprise herself, 2x4 with Something Royal. Sir Gaylord, the sire of Gay Missile and the dam of Secretariat. So you got one pedigree that's pretty clean, and then you've got one that, you know, that has got a ton of common ancestors.
Yeah, and if you really look at the pedigree closely of his dam, Weekend Surprise, this is a case where you take a mare that's pretty closely inbred. She was bred by Will Farish and Bill Kilroy as well, the same breeders of AP Indy. And it's interesting that, you know, they bred this mare, and she was 2x4, as I mentioned, to Something Royal, the dam of Secretariat. So that's a very closely inbred mare. And then they bred her to Seattle Slough. And Seattle Slough, you know, he was, as I mentioned, a Nashville-aligned stallion, and he also had Nashville on his female side, so he was inbred 4x4 to Nashville. So what you have is you're breeding a mare very closely inbred to Something Royal, to a stallion that's inbred to Nashville, and of course, that natural line through Bold Ruler and Something Royals would produce Secretariat. So it's a reinforcement of a lot of the elements that were actually in Secretariat's own pedigree. The mayor, who's inbred very closely to Something Royal, being bred to a stallion, Seattle Slew, who's inbred to Nash Ruler, the sire of Bold Ruler, who sired Secretariat. So these breeders, they did very, very closely inbreed, and subsequently, as we pointed out, AP Indy traces to Nash Ruler and the sire and to his broodmare to Nash Ruler. So he himself is inbred to Nash Ruler, as was his sire, who was inbred to Nash Ruler. So there's a lot of Nash Ruler blood, particularly in this pedigree. And, Nash Ruler was one of the great stallions in this country, one of the great imports that kind of really revolutionized the breed here. And not to get too far into the weeds, but Nash Ruler was the son of Nearco. And, of course, Nearco, you pointed out in Stormcat's pedigree, there's inbreeding to Nearco. And Nearco, of course, is the grandsire of Northern Dancer as well. His son Nearctic sired Northern Dancer. So this is, as they call it in a lot of deep pedigree stuff, this is a lot of Phalaris pedigree. And, it shows you that accumulating a lot of blood by certain key ancestors can really be explosive, and AP Indy is a terrific example of that.
I want to ask you what it is in this pedigree that has clicked. I mean, and what sort of made him, and he was a success immediately. I mean, Pulpit was in his first crop. Before we get to that, there is one thing I want to point out that is, I don't know if I've ever noticed it before, in APND, but he's got the presence of arguably the two most interesting horses that are tied in forever from the night of their birth at Claiborne. Round Table, of course, in Seattle Slew's pedigree, by virtue of Poker, who got My Charmer, Seattle Slew's dam, and then in Weekend Surprises pedigree, you've got Bold Ruler himself. So Round Table and Bold Ruler, born an hour apart, and part of the greatest class in the history of thoroughbred racing, the class of 57, which to me is endlessly fascinating, that group of horses in 57. And I don't know if I've ever noticed that the two of them are very prominent in AP Indy's pedigree.
And, of course, in Seattle Slew's pedigree, because, as you pointed out...
Yeah, Bold Ruler on top.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Reinforced through Weekend Surprise.
Yeah. And that Prince Quillo Nash Ruler blood, which was one of the blueprints to one of the great, quote-unquote, nicks that were created by Claiborne. Because they had Prince Quillo, and when they got Nash Ruler, this is how nicks kind of start. The farms in the old days, and they'd breed their Prince Quillo mares to their new import, which was Nash Ruler. And Prince Quillo's sons' daughters, the Prince Quillo line to Nash Ruler's sons, and of course, that's what it was with both Seattle Slew and Secretariat. Secretariat was by Bold Ruler out of Something Royal by Prince Quillo. Seattle Slew bred, these two Triple Crown winners were bred exactly the same way. Seattle Slew a bold ruler line horse out of a Prince Quillo line mare. That Prince Quillo line through round table, poker. So both horses, Secretariat and Seattle Slough, were bred on that bold ruler, natural and Nick with Prince Quillo. And by creating AP Indy, the breeders, what they did was they reinforced all of that. And you pointed that out with the Prince Quillo on both sides of the pedigree, as well as the Nashville on both sides of the pedigree. And they added the inbreeding to the mare that had so much success with that, which was something royal with Bold Ruler that produced, Secretariat. Secretariat also, as you pointed out, not only it was a terrific broodmare sire, but he was also a great, what we call broodmare sire of sires. Because not only was he the broodmare sire of Stormcat and AP Indy, also Gone West, and so, and others. So, you know, there's so much really high-end genetic material in AP Indy's pedigree. And then, of course, you couple that with, you know, his physical attributes and... it was just one of those cases where everything clicked, and he was a great success for everybody.
One thing that I'm noting in here when it comes to Weekend Surprise, and I learned, even well before I got this involved, I learned a lot about Weekend Surprise from Del Carroll, who trained her. And I'm just noticing, Sid, when you look at her alone, and clearly she's the linchpin here. There's no debate. I mean, as whatever Seattle Slough contributes, he contributes. I understand, but she's the key to everything here. And I'm just noticing her four grand dams: Miss Disco, Imperatrice, Busanda, and Missy Baba. Her four grand dams were all blue hen mares. I don't know if I've ever seen that. I don't know if I've ever seen that in one pedigree that like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's entail female. Oh, by the way, before I mention that, the other part about that she's probably the big contributor to this is that her sons were all ridgelings. I mean, noted ridgelings, and it's something that's been passed on. When you think of an
honor code,
you automatically assume that they're going to be ridgelings, and
amazing.
That's an interesting part of it, because they accomplished so much, and I guess you could point out in a very precarious manner, because they were left to one testicle, and yet a line that's so precarious in that situation has continued to proliferate.
On that topic, I started in that direction. Talk about the lines of broodmares that that over the years you recommended, and that going into his stud career, what assumptions were made as to who he was going to work with, and any surprising directions that it took.
Well, I think what happens when you get a horse of this caliber, you're going to get the best mares to him. And so what that means is that you're going to get the best daughters of the best sires at that time. So you're going to get great daughters of Stormcat. You're going to get great daughters of Mr. Prospector and those lines. And I mean, those are two right there that absolutely clicked with him and, became, phenomenal mix on their own. And you're not going to get a lot of obscure pedigrees when you're going to, you know, stallions such as that, such as he was. And it just, he got, obviously, that led to, you know, in general, a stallion that gets the best mares, everybody knows that's going to, that's problem number one. That's going to help the heck out of you. And so, and don't get me wrong, there have been plenty of great stallions that got great mares that didn't do anything. You still have to do it. And, you know, as John Segura always says, you know, stallion's going to turn the light switch on or off. It's either going to go on or not. And he was going to turn the light switch on. He's done it. He's just done it with great mares. In contrast, say, take his grandson, Tappet. Tappet was, you know, started off at a different price point. I mean, AP Indy started off at $50,000, which is a pretty good bargain, ended up as high as $300,000. Tappet also made his way into that stratosphere and stud fee, but he started off at $15,000. He turned the light switch on with cheap mares, and, you know, a mare like the Dam of Hanson had no black type in her pedigree for five generations, and he got a champion with it. With her. So when you get a stallion like a Tappet, you're likely to get more, you know, a wider variety of obscurity in your mates. When you're dealing with a stallion like AP Indy, it's almost kind of set for you in a way. I mean, the top guys in the business, the top mares, so the most well-pedigreed mares, the best-looking mares, those are the types you're going to get. And, of course, he came up during that era when, you know, they weren't huge books. So those types of mares are extremely, you know, well-vetted, and they're from syndicate members. And so that's an interesting part about him, too, was that he kind of spanned two eras where he started off in that smaller book era and weather the storm through the bigger books and continue to produce, because if you know, in the big book era, Steve, quite frankly, it's considered pretty good if you have a stallion can get 8% stakes winners from foals, for example. AP Indy got 13%. Black type winners from foals. He's had a total of 156 black type winners. That percentage is even higher than his sire Seattle Slough, who I think had 11% black type winners and over 100 stakes winners himself. But that's a terrific, you know, number to have. And sure. He also sired 30 individual. I think group one winners, grade one, group one winners. And, you know, his stats have been just phenomenal, however you slice and dice it.
You know, one of the other elements, too, as you're talking and you're mentioning the market, he had appeal both for those that were breeding commercially and those that were breeding to race. I mean, if you had a, you know, an elite broodmare band and you were going to raise your own, you're eager to go to him. And then he had the you know, the flashy good looks that would appeal in the ring as well. I mean, he really clicked all the, every box you could imagine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's really the amazing part about the stallion was, you know, every arena that he was in, he was the best. You know, he was among the best. He did everything he had to do and more. And a really iconic name that signifies just one word, class, when you see it in the pedigree. You know, you see AP Indy and... he was bred to such great mares from the beginning that you know, an AP Indy mare has the depth of pedigree behind her, for example. as opposed to, like I was just talking about, if you talk about Tappet, his daughters from his first few crops, well, guess what? They're not going to have depth of pedigree, so they might not end up, those first crops of daughters may not end up becoming great broodmares. AP Indy, right away, you know, boom, everything's there, you know.
Well, and you see that list of sons with it's just amazing, and there's going to be, you know, many, many more, you know, seasons of Honor Code and Bernardini and Mine Shafts and on and on and on. I mean, Malibu Moons, and then their sons and the Tappets and the Orbs and the whoever else. I mean, it's amazing.
And Malibu Moon, who you just mentioned, is a perfect example of a horse that was bred by a big breeder, B. Wayne Hughes. He was by a great daughter of Mr. Prospector, showed some glimpses of talent, but still got his chance at stud because of being a son of AP Indy. Started off at stud at Country Life Farm in Maryland for $3,000 and has ended up signing a Derby winner in Orb. So there's an example of a son of AP Indy that, you know, was not a stakes winner, and yet ascended to the top ranks.
Now, I can't even wrap it up, Sid, by saying, you know, what is the ultimate, you know, what is going to be his ultimate epitaph? Because it's not going to be written for a long time yet. I mean, there's undoubtedly, you know, broodmares of his that that are going to produce yet, and sons and daughters, and it'll take years to understand just how important. I mean, we know he's important and is going to make a lasting impact, but there's really no way yet to know just where he's going to stand, but it sure feels like he'll, you know, he goes down as a patriarch of the highest degree.
Yeah, he does, and you know, we should also give a shout out to Mr. Farish, who bred the horse with Bill Kilroy, and he was a Lane's End product through and through, and you know. Will Farish is also co-breeder of Danzig. So, you know, it's pretty amazing when you think about the Lane's End part of it, too. And that's why you always pay attention to the breeder as well, you know?
No doubt. And, you know, there's foresight and, you know, planning and, you know, it takes all kinds of, the ability to, you know, to see where something is headed. And even though we didn't talk about the breeders of, you know, some of the ancestors on his page, I mean, you can just at a glance, you can see Al Vanderbilt and, you know, you mentioned Claiborne repeatedly. There's Buck Passer, you know, who's the sire of Lassie Deer, the Second Dam. So you got Ogden Phipps in here. I mean, these are all, you know, distilled efforts that whatever generation is counting on, you know, certain elements that have already been established, and it's what makes breeding so fascinating. And you know, this generation of breeder is relying on the foresight of the prior generations, and that's,
yeah, exactly, that's well put.
That's how you get where we are.
Exactly.
And then, of course, you still have to just hope for the best, as the saying goes, right? The best to the best and hope for the best.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Sid, going to talk to Bill Harrigan next, and we'll talk about AP Indy as a young horse. But so many people were so eager, even you know, knowing why AP Indy was going to get this focus, they were so eager to hear these stories and hear him feted this way. So I appreciate it.
And thanks to you for doing so.
No, not at all. Where are you? Give everybody an update. What's where are you?
I'm still in Daytona Beach. I'll be next week. You'll speak to me back in Brooklyn, and then I'm going to go down to Phoenix for a couple of weeks to see the first few weeks of spring training with the Padres. But it's like getting a horse ready for the Derby. I've been watching the workouts, and he's been knock on wood, he's been, showing some incredible stuff. So,
nice.
We go to the next step.
I love it. All right. Well, safe travels. Get him, get Joe over to the Cactus League camp, and we'll keep following and rooting along. Sid Fernando, everybody.
Absolutely. Appreciate it.
Next week, I will obviously be talking about the Fountain of Youth win, and I think we'll probably, I haven't discussed it yet, but there was the interesting result in the Hyacinth in Japan, that Cafe Pharaoh, who is...
We can cover him, too, yeah.
We should, because our friend Paul Pompa, Paul has had so much success with Mary's Follies. She's been so productive for him as a broodmare, her progeny selling have been very notable, and this American Pharaoh son certainly pulled a bit of an arrogate, kind of blowing the brake and then coming running. We'll see if he's going to end up being the Japanese road to the Derby qualifier. There's still more to come, but it was certainly worth watching. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. Another Triple Crown winner.
Mm-hmm. Well,
son of a Triple Crown winner. Then.
Yeah. Well, and we'll see if he comes stateside. We've got to remind you that as the babies are hitting the ground here every day, get a hold of Sid, 510-490-1111 at Work Thoroughbred Consultants, and maybe next week also, Sid, we can hit on some of those elements of the mare compatibility report that I mentioned last week, because Sid sent one to us for Voltarine, and I was fascinated by all the information in it. So I want to explain people, and maybe we'll put up some pages as examples and show people what they get with it and why it's so helpful in planning your matings. And you can get your own AP Indy, maybe. If the cards are right. Sid, thanks so much.
All right, you got it, Steve. Talk to you next week.
You got it. Sid Fernando, everybody. Follow Sid as Sid Fernando on Twitter and Sire Watch as well. And, of course, Hillendale Farm. Looking forward to getting a visit in soon with John Secura. And ahead of the two-year-old in training season. We'll take a timeout, and I told you it was going to be a busy day. We still got to get Johnny D in here and Bill Harrigan first. Bill's going to join us next. He trained AP Indy as a young horse, and you see Harrigan typically in April, you'll see him start some two-year-olds that he develops and then essentially sells. That's his business. And it's an overdue pleasure to have Bill Harrigan join us next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Developed by Horsemen, HorseBills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, environment-friendly, paperless revolution of how equine industries bill and receive payments. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for each horse, whose owners can pay through the same website with just one click. Say goodbye to stacks of invoices, handwritten checks, and postage costs. Easy accounting for all parties with the highest online security measures. Get started free at horsebills.com. Simply register with your name and email address. Free to sign up. No subscription fees to vendors until the first invoice is sent. For owners, you get a free account, comprehensive dashboard with information on all horses owned and billing records, ACH and credit card payment options. For vendors, generate invoices efficiently and receive payments quickly from both owners and other vendors. Syndicate and partnership managers get flexible billing and payment options to both vendors and syndicate members. For more info, call 888-938-4643, 888-938-4643, or log on to horsebills.com. That's horsebills.com.
Get started in Kentucky. Over $8 million in additional purse money is available at the five Kentucky tracks for horses eligible for the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. Kentucky is a good place to race your Kentucky bred. Come home to Kentucky and make a start.
DRF Sports Form Digital Edition, your ultimate weekly betting guide. Published by Daily Racing Form, DRF Sports Form delivers all of the analysis and insight you need for every NFL game and more than 40 college football matchups. Beat the spread with powerful trends and sharp angles. Tap into best bets, expert picks, parlay winners, and more. All for just $4.99 per issue. Get this week's edition free. Visit drf.com/sportsform. Enter code DRF Sports.
University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program can prepare you for an exciting career in racing. Turn your passion into a paycheck. Nearly 90% of our students are employed in the racing industry immediately upon graduation. What career track are you on? The University of Arizona Racetrack Industry Program. Enroll today and get on track for success. For scholarship opportunities and more, check out our website at ua-rtip.org.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provides...